Brian, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Wade. Great to be on with you.
As always, let's jump into the football game. Had a chance to take a couple of my boys, including Miller, to the game on Saturday. It was a very entertaining game. It was a fun game to watch. Unfortunately, it didn't go the way the Jayhawks would have liked. And one of the things that I take out of this game, and I've been debating with some KU fans out in our area. I've been pretty stern in this, and maybe you agree with me, maybe you agree with the other folks. But there are people that were coming out and blaming Jason Bean for the loss because of a couple interceptions. And I said, you know, without Jason Bean, we would have had no chance of winning that game. He was incredible in the first half. Yes, those were two big mistakes. However, he didn't drop a pick six. He didn't miss a couple extra points that were blocked. He didn't miss tackles. He was not the running game was ineffective for him, so he had to throw it probably more than they would have liked. He didn't have a costly penalty there late in the game that moved him back before that fourth and five play. I guess I some people see it as me making excuse for Jason Bean. I was just trying to say that there were many reasons why KU lost the game, and to put it all on Jason Bean, to me, seemed to be a little bit over the top, considering that he is a backup quarterback. He did throw for 400 yards. He did throw for five touchdowns. How do you weigh in on that whole discussion?
Man, you know, the Jason Bean topic is fascinating to me. I understand why fans can be disappointed when we don't perform the way we expect our guys to perform. I understand how frustrating it can be when we get all worked up with guys like me coming on the radio and talking about eight wins. A chance to keep this arrow pointed upward, which we absolutely are still on track to do. It's disappointing when it doesn't look the way we want it to on a given day. You know, that's the first time we've gone down to Stillwater in a decade and a half and had the better team. That doesn't ensure that you always win. That's why sports are sports, right? Mm-hmm. But to see the amount of criticism that Jason Bean has received, it's frustrating for me to see that because I see how hard the kid works. I see how the kid is there every day, pumping up his teammates, being present, accountable, engaged, giving Kansas something that we're really lucky he's able to give because others haven't been available to do that. And he has. And then we talked before about how, you know, a lot of football coaches will tell you the best ability is availability. And we're lucky he's been healthy and available, engaged, and pouring into this program. It's not going to be perfect. You know, no quarterback situation is. Ask K-State fans. You know, they've gone through their own inconsistencies this year. But for a quarterback who started the season as the backup, and yes, he started now four of our seven games, but a guy that's, you know, is clearly, based on the head-to-head competition when healthy, he's your second-best option based on the preseason depth chart. For him to come in there and, you know, be one fluttered ball away from tying Todd Reesing's touchdown record, and then we make him the scapegoat at the end of the day, is a little short-sighted. The fluttered ball I'm talking about was the first interception.
Yeah.
He threw into a crosswind. It hung up. It got picked off. It happens, right? It's unfortunate. But he still finishes with the second greatest touchdown passing day in the history of KU football. Yes, there were a couple of costly interceptions, but you're very astute to point out the plays that others could have made that were dropped, or untimely penalties that happened, some penalties that should have been called and weren't.
Yep.
There's a lot of things that unravel in a one-possession game, but I think it's really unfair to put it all on one player, particularly when he's doing an admirable job filling in. I know the Texas game was frustrating, but you name one quarterback that's going to be thrown into that situation. I mean, I've done this for 20 years. I've never seen a situation where a guy suffers an injury or aggravates one in a pre-game hotel walkthrough and then can't go on the biggest stage, biggest game of the season. Jason was put in an unenviable spot, and I think some of fans, and I don't know the fans you're talking to, but some of the fans, you know, frustrations include that day. I throw that one out.
Yes.
I give him a hall pass on that day, honestly, because it was such a bizarre set of circumstances. And then I look at the total body of work the rest of the time, including the good throws and a couple bad ones. Is he Jalen Daniels, and does he have quite the same ceiling or trajectory? Probably not, but is he a dang good quarterback that we're lucky to have, and he could help us still get to that 8-4 season win total? Absolutely he is. But those are mighty shoes to fill when you're asked to, you know, fill in for the preseason conference player of the year. I say celebrate the things that he has given us, which is he's been able to stay healthy. He's 100% in on this program and this team and wants to be here and is you know, loving on his teammates every single day. I love seeing that. And understand that not many programs in the country in this transfer portal era that we currently live in have two guys that have that capability, because usually if you have a backup as good as Jason, he's already left to go be QB1 somewhere else. So I understand the frustration. I understand the disappointment. But to single out one particular guy or to aim that ire at one particular player, I know it's the most important position, some would say, in all of sports, not just football, but understand there's a lot of good things he's doing too. And when you compare it to where we would be without him right now, I think fans need to understand how lucky we are to have Jason Bean.
Brian Hayne, the voice of the Jayhawks, with us, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky at 118 North Millen Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701. I think the most disappointing thing to me watching the game, and by the way, it was really cool to be in Stillwater the first time. I'd never been there before, and it looks like kind of almost like a hockey rink. There's not much room on the sidelines. They got all the walls padded, and everybody was so nice and friendly down there. Never had any problem with anybody. The thing that stood out to me initially was the defense did not play well at all at the beginning of the game. Really, really played poorly, bad tackling, bad angles. But I thought improved as the game went on, settled down. The kicking game was atrocious with the extra points. That was almost downright embarrassing. That cost KU 3 points because it went for two after they missed the two before that. But the thing that stood out to me, Brian, was that, you know, the week prior, Kansas ran for 399 yards against Central Florida. I know Central Florida is not good against the run. Oklahoma State's better against the run. But I think that was the thing to me that stood out more, that, you know, Jason, I don't think the game plan was Jason Bean to go throw for 5 touchdowns at 400 yards. I don't think the game plan was Jason Bean to throw the ball around a ton. And remember, Kansas was ahead at halftime. They're down early. They're up at halftime. They're up 32-27 before that ill-fated interception you mentioned in the end zone. But they never really got the run game going at all with Hyshaw or Neal. And when your run game is ineffective, that puts a ton of pressure on your quarterback.
It does, no doubt. And we talked about in last week's report, this would be a game where they would have to have greater balance than the UCF game, because the UCF vulnerability was in the trenches. And we knew we had a decided advantage with our offensive line versus their run blocking and their run tackling. And so we knew that was the area Kansas had to attack versus the Knights. And the next week, there were vulnerabilities in the OSU secondary that they thought they could expose. Didn't mean it was going to swing from one complete extreme to the other, but it meant it would be a much more passing game-involved day, with hopefully a steady diet of the ground attack with two backs that were heading into last Saturday, number one and number two in the conference in yards per carry. I think what we found very quickly was, holy moly, OSU is so much better at stuffing the run. They're so much bigger in the trenches. We don't have nearly the advantage we had a week ago. And they knew that that gap would be narrowed dramatically. But I think the balance that they hoped for was ruled out pretty early. And the exposure in the OSU secondary that led to some of these wide open walk-in touchdowns by Mason Fairchild made it very evident that that might be the way KU was going to get it done on that day. And so certainly you try to maintain a sense of balance and you try to establish the run throughout, but it was very evident that 7.6 yards of carry wasn't going to happen for Devin Neal on this day, and he was going to struggle to get 3 or 4 yards of carry based on the OSU defensive front. But they had some gaping holes and blown coverages in their secondary, and I thought Kansas and Andy Kotelnicki and Jason Bean did a good job of capitalizing on that. But you're right, you know, when you don't have the ability to balance the run with the pass consistently, eventually defenses can make adjustments. And I think if there is one fair constructive criticism of Jason, sometimes a singular mistake can turn into two or three. And we need to be able to rise above, you know, a setback here or there, not allow it to snowball into two or three. But I was proud of the way that we attacked early when we saw vulnerabilities in their secondary and saw that things weren't working on the ground. You would hope as the game goes on, you find other ways to get Hyshaw and Neal back on track a little bit more. But clearly, you know, OSU made it tough in that regard. It was not a banner day on the ground by any means. But I think the way you opened, talking about special teams, defense, everything goes into a loss when you lose by a one-possession game. You know what I mean? Yeah. And there, a one singular play by arguably our most hyped player, Kobe Bryant.
Yep.
It was a 10-point swing. If he catches that sure thing pick six, because there was nobody separating him in the end zone, he scores. Now, I'm assuming we get the PAT. Who knows?
Right.
The argument we do. Instead, they kick a field goal.
Yep.
10 points right there. Yep. You know what I mean? 10-point swing. There were multiple other instances where we almost had a takeaway, and obviously the special teams woes you chronicled earlier. So there's a lot of things that went into it. I just think, to your point, Kansas struggled to establish balance offensively. We never really got the run game going. But I do think in the same breath that we point that out constructively, we need to give them credit for exposing some holes that they perceived to be there in the OSU secondary and capitalizing for as long as they could on those. And who knows, man, if that penalty, and I don't want to sound like spilled milk here, but if the late hit that was signaled on Devin Neal, but they actually meant to say Luke Grimm. I don't know how you confuse 11 and 4, but they called out 4 over the PA. It was supposed to be Luke Grimm. If that doesn't happen, I mean, they probably, at that point, I mean, you're marching down the field. You're almost in the red zone. Who knows? Maybe you go in and score. And all of these woes that we're talking about are quickly forgotten because of how much that swings the game as well. So there's a lot of things you can break down, and we could be talking basketball, baseball, football. Anytime you lose by one score, it's more than just one thing or one guy, and I think that's the point we're both trying to make.
Thank you. That's exactly the point I've been making this week to folks. We remember the last play of a game, and we say that's the we lost it. You know that, you know, Jason Bean, it wasn't the last play of the game. The game was lost here. There was a combination of a whole bunch of things that led up to that. And one other thing I'll say too is, I think it's very obvious, and you pointed this out, and it makes total sense, is that Jason Bean's a very good runner, but you don't want him running a lot, because if he gets knocked out of the game, you go to a freshman, and you do not want a freshman, especially on the road in a hostile environment, having to deal with that down at Stillwater. And there was a couple times where they had Bean run or a design run, and he got out of bounds. And I've heard some people say, well, he's soft, he doesn't take on a tackler. Well, I would imagine he's being instructed not to take an unnecessary hit now. I will say early in his career, I think there are times where he could get some extra yards and he's decided to go out of bounds. But the thing is, usually when he does play, he's in for the injured starting quarterback. And so what good is your football team if your top two quarterbacks are out of the game? So you got to dial it back a little bit when it comes to his legs, don't you?
That's 100% accurate. And I think a lot of times we as Kansas fans that have seen all the games, we remember maybe his first season 2 years ago stepping out of bounds on a one-yard line. And then we just label him and put him in that category when that's so unfair based on everything you very astutely just pointed out. They want to keep him upright. They obviously want to get as many yards as possible, but he's being instructed not to take unnecessary chances when we're already down to our second quarterback. And I'll tell you what, there is a lot of belief and confidence in Cole Ballard, not just amongst the coaches, but amongst his peers. But as you said, at the end of the day, it's still a true freshman walk-on you have behind Jason. So, of course, he's being instructed not to take unnecessary risk, and that has to factor into your mind. But, it's a tough spot to be in, no doubt. And, we'll see what it looks like coming out of the bye week. If the Jalen Daniels question is coming next, I really don't know how to answer it, because he's got to prove he can get back, not just on the practice field, but doing things at full speed. And you'd like to see that prior to game week. And you know, we're waiting and wondering if that's going to be the case still. We didn't have Coach on Hawk Talk last night, so we couldn't address it there. But I know he's around the guys, and he's cheering them on, and hopefully he'll be able to do Jalen Daniels-like things very soon. But man, if there was ever a game to come back for, especially after a bye week and what would have been 3+ weeks at that point, you'd love to have him for a top 5 Oklahoma matchup on homecoming, national TV, all that. And if you don't, then, like I said, we got to recognize Jason Bean for all the good things that he has and is. Understand that it's not going to be perfect, nor would it be with Jalen back there. But support this guy and try to play complimentary football in all three phases of the game, to where it's not just on one guy, make or break, win or lose.
Yep, well said. And, of course, as you mentioned, KU has this weekend off, and then they'll get ready for that game against Oklahoma coming up next Saturday, which we'll preview with Brian coming up next Thursday here on the Sports Ticket. I want to turn our attention to the men's basketball team. KU, the number one team in the preseason poll. And history proves that that's not a good thing. The previous three times that Kansas has been the number one preseason team under Bill Self, they have never made it out of the first weekend. Lost in first round, second round, second round. Now, obviously, that could change. This team seems to be loaded, no doubt. But I want to ask you about something, and I'm hoping you can provide some clarification, because Bill Self yesterday at Big 12 Media Days, and I didn't see when he said all this or whatever else, but it's being explained here in the story that I have, and maybe it's inaccurate, saying that Bill Self made a shocking revelation confirming a report that he offered to sit out the 2022 postseason to expedite the end of the NCAA case. Bill Self said, and I quote, "I was at the point, guys, where I would have done just about anything to get it over with for the protection of our players and for the future, not knowing the process or trusting the process. No admission of guilt. It was just me trying to move things forward." The clarification, when I first read that, I just assumed we were talking about last postseason. But you actually look at it, according to the story, it writes 2022, which would have been the year that Kansas won the national championship. So can you provide any clarification? Was Bill Self willing to sit out the tournament that KU won at all?
I wish I could. I can't provide clarification, and I wasn't there when he said it because I had to drive back to Lawrence in the middle of his press conference for Hawk Talk. And I've not been in on the meeting that follows the unpacking of that comment. So I would hate to speculate. But I do know that it reached a point of, you know, they thought they needed to be proactive, not, as you said, in any admission of guilt, but, you know, to speed along something that's been going for 6 years, maybe we start imposing some of these self-imposed penalties. And they did that. And they thought that the four games at the start of the year was substantial enough. And honestly, in some regards, now that everything has you know, been decided upon, there's maybe a penalty or two that they were probably too harsh on themselves. To hear that something such as that may have been on the table, I think falls in that category of was probably above and beyond the level of harshness that they needed. But again, I don't know the exact origin of that comment, which postseason he was thinking of. So I'd hate to speculate, but I will say it really reached a climate and a sense of urgency that, hey, you know, we want to move ahead.
Yeah.
Because it's remarkable what he and his staff and his teams were able to accomplish with a six-year black cloud hanging over them, to win the conference four times, to win a national title, to go to the Final Four, all that, in the midst of such scrutiny and the negative recruiting that came with, and all the stress. Think of all the stuff that a college basketball coach has to go through just without any additional pressure, anxiety, meetings, depositions, whatever. I mean, he was coaching every year a national title contender, with maybe 1 year's exception, all while having to deal with lawyers and other stuff.
Yeah.
They were just ready to be done, okay? Yeah. And so I'll tell you what, it's an upward and onward mentality. You heard him use a quote yesterday regarding recruiting where he said, "We're going to go for the throat." I've heard him use that phrase a lot in the last 3 months, which speaks to, without quoting him because it was behind closed doors until yesterday, when I've come on and I said, you know, I sense a different kind of fire in the belly
yes.
of our head coach, a different kind of motivation. You know, he used that quote yesterday, and I thought, okay, here we go. You know, I'm telling you, whether he coaches another 5 years, another 10 years, whatever it is left in front of him, he wants to go all out. Because it's kind of like, I grew up working at a golf course. I didn't belong to a golf course. I worked at one. And part of my job as the golf boy was to bring all the golf carts from the cart barn up to the first tee box. And anybody that's ever driven a golf cart knows that there's a governor on there that keeps you from going too fast when you're running downhill. I think Bill Self feels like the last 6 years he's had the most restrictive governor on his ability to get the type of players and recruit the way they want to, you know, be able to land as many guys as possible, because they've had the negative recruiting against them and the cloud hanging over them. I think he feels like that governor's been lifted, and now there's a chance to go back to recruiting like Kansas again, which means you know, and it's amazing. They've been in on most of the top guys, but getting more of the top guys more consistently on top of the great additions we've seen in the portal. But, you know, you look at that national title team, the guys they won with.
Yeah.
We know Chai Baji was ranked in the 300s. Christian Brown was barely in the top 100 at the time he committed. Yes, David McCormick was a McDonald's All-American, but back in McDonald's All-American. And it's amazing. You know, you add in Remy Martin and a couple other pieces. Dewan Harris was committed to Missouri State, and they won it all with that team because the coaching and the player development and the game planning is that good. Now just imagine if you can step out from underneath this black cloud and go back to getting some of the guys that they were getting before, the Embiids and the Wiggins, with that coaching and development, that kind of thing. And folks will say, wait a minute, you didn't win at all with Embiid and Wiggins. Well, Embiid was hurt for the last dozen games, and obviously they were freshmen. But my point is, self wants to go for the throat, as you said yesterday. And I love that vim and vigor and passion, because you put that with his Hall of Fame coaching pedigree and everything that makes him the best in the business, but now there's an extra fire in his belly. Look out. That's going to be exciting. And however many years we have left of that, I know he wants more than just one more title. He wants multiple additional titles. And Kansas fans that are listening right now, and Glenn Elder at Beloit and surrounding areas, to buckle up, grab that steering wheel tight at 10-2 and think, here we go, baby. This is going to be fun. His Bill Self is on the hunt. He wants to make up for lost time. And certainly it's not just the lifting of all this NCAA stuff. It's the fact that he didn't get to coach in the NCAA tournament with a team that was a one seed. You think that is stuck in his craw a little bit too? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That was health-related. But, I mean, he's ready to get back at it. And as he said yesterday, go for the throat. And I, for one, think that's awesome. So I can't wait to see what that's going to look like.
Yeah, he just has to recover from two broken ribs while he played with his grandkids at the field house. That's the only thing that's slowing him down. He said it was one of the least athletic moves of his life. I'm sure there's some kind of camera footage there somehow to show what happened, but I have no idea what he did to break two ribs, but that didn't seem to be slowing him down yesterday either.
It's funny. I've talked to him when he's been, you know, mere hours away from a major, you know, physical setback. I'm talking about last March. And I've seen him mere minutes after the broken ribs. And I'm telling you, this guy is tough as nails, because I never would have known something was that wrong. He sat 2 feet away from me during late night, and he looked a little uncomfortable, but you didn't think that anything was wrong, like broken ribs. And so to find that out yesterday after the fact, I mean, this guy is tough as nails, let me tell you.
Absolutely.
And I love it that it was playing with his grandkids, because if there's anything that will make him dial back from the go for the throw, we're going for multiple more titles and all that, it's seeing, you know, his two granddaughters say, hey, Grampy, can we sit on your lap? and then all of a sudden that big smile comes back and the human element kicks in. And so I love it that he has that great work-life balance and that he is an awesome grandpa, as much as he is a terrific coach.
Well, definitely, and KU will be the one that'll have the X on their back, no doubt, as the number one preseason team, and we'll talk more about that as we go throughout the next few conversations with you. Time for the off-the-wall question. So last night I was prepping, and I was thinking, you know, what do I ask Brian? And I was just kind of hitting a wall. I was like, I've asked him so many different things over the years, and my wife was walking through the living room, and I said, I need to come up with an off-the-wall question for Brian Haney. And I didn't really actually ask my wife for input, but I kind of was insinuating that maybe she could provide input. And this is the question she came up with, okay?
Oh,
it's nothing earth-shattering at all. But she said, why don't you ask him the best restaurant that he's been to on a road trip? So nothing local in Lawrence, but what's the best restaurant that you've gone to or the best meal you've had when you've been out on a road trip? That was the question she came up with. I said, you know what? I'm hungry right now. So that sounds like a great question.
Wow, that is a great question. You know, to say the best I've been to would probably be places that we don't get to go every year, because it might be at Champions Classic in New York City or Chicago or something like that. We've had some amazing meals and great places. But when I get asked similar questions, I always try to think of the annual stops in the Big 12. And I would think in 7 years of doing these with you, I brought this up at some point, maybe not.
Maybe.
But in Waco, Texas, there's a place called George's.
Okay.
And it's the home of Georgia's Big O Deck, O apostrophe deck. They got a deck that's covered. They bring these schooners that are the size of your head that are like $3. And if you're a beer drinker, my goodness. But the best thing about Georgia's, all right, and again, I'm not talking like fine dining, like five stars, whatever. I'm just saying, like, this is a casual Friday night, put on your blue jeans and go out and have a good time. They make these things called crazy wings. I call them chicken balls, all right?
Okay.
Because I don't think of wings when I look at these. It's a ball of chicken with a jalapeno pepper in the middle of it and cheese in the middle of it, wrapped in bacon and then deep fat fried, which I know sounds terrible for your clogged arteries. Your arteries are clogging just hearing me describe it. But I'm telling you, when you bite into these, and the cheese oozes out of the chicken, and the savory bacon is there, it's a little slice of heaven. And they bring them out in plates of 10 as an appetizer, but whenever I go, I get them as a full-blown meal. I first discovered these through people much more experienced than I 20 years ago when I was first breaking in. And anytime any team from Kansas played a team from Baylor, mm-hmm. whether it was women's soccer, track, whatever, the SID, which stands for Sports Information Director, mm-hmm. was to get two to-go orders, wrap them in styrofoam and try to keep them cold and plastic bag and all that, and somehow get them back to Lawrence the next day where all 10 other SIDs would hover around each other and consume these things because they were that good.
Mm.
The crazy wings at George's.
Mm.
I know you want to go see Chip and Joanna when you go to Waco and mm-hmm. you want to eat at the farmhouse and all that. I'm telling you, the Big O Deck with the schooner and the crazy wings is where you got to be.
Mm, I am drooling right now. I am so hungry after asking you that question. I'll blame my wife for making me even more. I'm hangry now, as they say, as all I've had is a banana to eat this morning, and I've been up since 6. So that sounds really, really delicious and delightful, man. Hey, I don't.
I'll send you a picture.
Yeah, you're going to take a picture?
Okay. Put it up on the social media of Sports Ticket because they're pretty dang good.
Ooh, that would be good. That would be good. Shoot that to me. And yeah, you actually haven't mentioned that with me before. So that was a new question and a new answer. I haven't heard that story before. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so
tell you why there's definitely finer dining choices. that's the one. I mean, put it this way, and I know we got to go. When we won it all in 2008, and uh-huh. I was driving back from San Antonio, I drove an hour out of my way to go through Waco to
really?
Get these things.
Wow.
So that's how good they are.
And so you're saying it's a great place to eat, but probably if I'm needing to take my wife out for a romantic dinner, there might be better options from that viewpoint.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. This is Friday night fun, but then Saturday you got to
gotcha.
Really, roll out the red carpet.
Put a little more into it. I got you. Hey, man, enjoy the weekend off from calling some football, and we'll talk to you again next Thursday. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Take care. That's Brian Hayden, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.